Good morning. All right, welcome to the School for Successful Ranching. My name is Logan Papanchak, and I'll be moderating the session today. At this time, I would ask that you please place all cell phones on silent and remove your hats. There's a table in the back where you can place your hats. We would like to take this time to thank our generous sponsors of the School for Successful Ranching for their support of this program and commitment to producer education. There are small displays set up in the hallway on this floor, and we ask that you please visit their booths in the expo and say thank you. We could not do this program without them. Sponsors include Capital Farm Credit, Cattlemen's Education Series, Corteva, Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, Lone Star Ag Credit, Positive Feeds, Rabo Agrifinance, Stay Tough Fence Manufacturing, and Texas Beef Quality Assurance. Our first presentation is Mineral Supplements, What Do I Need for My Operation? Presented by Dr. Jason Banta with Texas A&M AgriLife Extension. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Banta.
Thank you, Logan. Good morning. How is everybody?
Good.
How's the volume?
Good.
Okay, not too loud? All right. Need louder. How's that? Better? Okay. We're going to keep this real informal today. At any point in time you have any questions, stop and ask me. Because if you're anything like me, if I try to hold on to that question and wait, I end up forgetting it, and then I miss what was covered the previous 5 or 10 minutes. So don't hesitate to stop and ask me at any point in time. So what we're going to talk about this morning is a topic that gets at times complicated in the industry. It really doesn't need to get as complicated as what it does. So I'm going to try to simplify it, and hopefully when you leave here, you'll feel a little bit more comfortable about what you need in your geographic environment and what makes the most sense for you. And I may surprise you on a couple of things as we get in here today. Get my disclaimer out of the way. I am going to go ahead and talk us about some actual brand names. It just makes it so much easier. Not trying to completely endorse those, or if you don't see something in here, not trying to necessarily discriminate against those. We just can't put everything, but I do want to try to put some of the major ones that we see all across Texas and Oklahoma as well. So when we talk about mineral nutrition, what is mineral nutrition impact? Why is it important? Well, it's going to be important for growth. It's important for reproduction, milking of that cow, health, and all those things are going to lead to profitability. So that's why we want to make sure we're balanced and we're getting the proper mineral supplementation into those cows. Now, where do we get minerals from? So what we typically think about is this, a mineral supplement feeder out there, right? But are we getting mineral out of this forage? Absolutely. We're getting the largest portion, generally, of what's in that cow's diet coming from that forage. Can we get mineral from our water sources? Yep. And in certain parts of the U.S., that water source can have certain minerals that make things challenging for us. And then if we're supplementing some kind of a protein or energy supplement, there's going to be minerals in there, and that may impact what we need to do. So when I talk about a complete mineral supplement, the components we'll typically are going to see in there are going to be salt, macro minerals, trace minerals, or we may call those micro minerals as well, and then generally we'll have vitamins A, D, and E in there. Now, did anybody notice in your mineral supplementation packet or the loose mineral you were feeding here over the last 2 years that maybe the vitamin A content changed for a short period of time? If you're wondering what's happened, there was a major manufacturing issue that sent the price of vitamin A through the roof. And so to help keep some things in control from a price standpoint, some of the companies backed off the vitamin A for a period of time, and then they put that back in there. Which, depending on what time of year we're in, if we're on green growing forages, that's not a concern at all. If we're on dry forages, then we do need to be thinking about that vitamin A. But just when I tell you macro minerals, specifically what we're going to talk about, and the reason we call these macros is we're going to measure them in terms of percent of the diet. And so we're talking about things like calcium, phosphorus, potassium, magnesium, sodium, and sulfur. All right? So you don't see salt on there, but what we're really worried from that salt fraction is the sodium portion of it. And then the trace or the micro minerals are going to be things like copper, zinc, manganese, selenium, iodine, cobalt, iron. Typically, we don't supplement this one. We get plenty of that from when they're consuming that forage and getting some dirt consumption along with it. And then there's some other ones, but these are really the major ones we focus on. And you'll see those represented in either parts per million of the diet or milligrams per kilogram. And realize those are the same two things. We can use them interchangeably. Parts per million or milligrams per kilogram. Now, there's a lot of companies out there that sell mineral products. So what are some of the differences and how do I choose? Well, the difference is formulation of those products are going to be one big difference. Mineral source, and we'll talk about mainly source of those trace minerals later on. Reputation of that company, palatability enhancers. A big one for me is research programs. Are they testing their products and making sure the intake is where it needs to be, not too high, not too low? Are they trying to advance their products and make them better? And then weatherization. So how well does that mineral hold up to the weather? And that can be rain or it can be wind. So we're in high rainfall areas. If we don't have a good weatherization product in that mineral, what happens generally when it gets wet? It turns into a brick that you got to take a hammer and bust up so those cows aren't going to eat it. So is it worth a little bit of money to have a good weatherization product in there so we don't get that brick form? Now, what happens if we get in the panhandle or parts of West Texas and we get a lot of wind? Could we blow some of that mineral out of the feeder? Absolutely. And so that's another component of that weatherization process that we think about. Now, when we talk about minerals, especially loose minerals, we'll typically see two different intake targets. So some of those products will be formulated for 2 ounces. There's not near as many of those as what there used to be. And then some of them are going to be formulated for 4 ounces, and that's actually what most of them are going to be. Now, when we talk about 4 ounces, I'm comfortable most of the time if those cows are eating somewhere between 3 and 4 ounces. So if they're not eating right at 4 ounces, I'm not going to worry about that, all right? As long as we're somewhere in that 3 to 4 ounce range on average. And the key is average, and I'll show you that here in a minute. Now, if you're unsure, one quick way you can usually tell what the targeted intake for a particular mineral is to look at the selenium level. And so if you see selenium at 25 to 27 parts per million, that tells me automatically that's going to be a 4 ounce targeted product, generally speaking. If I see selenium in the neighborhood of 50 to 54, that's typically going to be a 2 ounce product. So that's just a quick little thing I'll check to know what that company's formulated that product for, if they don't specifically label it on the tag. So when we talk about common formulations, there's going to be 3 major common formulations when it comes to Texas. And one of those is going to be a higher calcium, lower phosphorus. All right. So when I say higher calcium, lower phosphorus, it may be 16% calcium and 5% phosphorus. All right. And then we'll have some that'll be a similar calcium and phosphorus ratio. And this used to be what everybody would call a 12-12 mineral, 12% calcium, 12% phosphorus. In recent years, because we don't need as much phosphorus and because the price of phosphorus is one of the most expensive things in that mineral, a lot of times what we'll see on some of these is maybe they'll have 12% calcium, 10% phosphorus, all right, in those products. Or you may see them at 8 and 6, depending on who's making it. And then the third group in there is going to be what I call a winter pasture mineral. So if we're grazing cows out on wheat or oats or ryegrass or something, especially those lactating cows, we're going to want some magnesium in there. But I'm going to want a moderate level of magnesium, generally speaking. A lot of times if we get too much magnesium in that mineral, those cows just won't eat it. If they don't eat it, it doesn't do us any good. And so generally a more moderate level is what I'm looking for. This will cover a large portion of the cow-calf producers in the state of Texas, those 3 basic formulations, all right? We don't have to get real crazy with them. Yes, ma'am. Okay, so that's going to be in percent as long on a 4 ounce mineral. As long as it's higher than 5%, I'm comfortable with it. Okay, now what a lot of people think about when they think about a high mag mineral is 10% or higher. But what we see a lot of times on those is we just can't get the intake. And so that 5% is higher. Now, there are a few examples. There's one that has 13% that the cows eat really well. But that company's really worked on getting some palatability enhancers in there and tweaking some things to get that intake. So just to give you an example, if we were to look at the Cargill line, which is their, they have several, but the one we're going to talk about is their right now. The Emerald would be their high calcium, low phosphorus. The Bronze would be their similar calcium and phosphorus ratio. And then the Gold over here is their high mag winter pasture mineral. This fourth one you see is just a different source of trace minerals. So those three are those three common formulations I talked about. And for those of you who kind of are wondering what are the numbers in there, at the back of the slides, if you download them or if you get the proceedings book, just for reference, I put the tags for those products in there for you to look at. So the other thing when we start dealing with, we start with those common formulations, but then we can get different additives to add into those minerals. And so if we look at the Purina line of mineral, and theirs is wind and rain, and specifically for Texas, we have a Texas all season. So if you talk to friends or colleagues in another state, their Purina line is going to be a little different. Purina has one kind of custom for the state of Texas where they've kicked up a few little things. So they have a Texas All Season 12, and the way they name their product line is when you see that number in there, that's the level of phosphorus in that mineral. So this All Season 12 is going to be their similar calcium and phosphorus ratio. Their high calcium, lower phosphorus product is this Texas All Season 7.5, which has been their long-term product. Recently, and not in all locations, but they've come out with a new one that actually simplifies things a little bit because they bumped up the level of magnesium in there, is a Texas All Season 5 Complete. So these are pretty similar, the 7.5 and the 5. The magnesium level is a big difference as far as what I need to do from a supplementation standpoint. And then they have a high mag winter pasture mineral over here. So, for example, if you're on winter pasture and you're worried about grass tetany and those lactating cows, either one of these bottom two would be just fine for me. That All Season 5 Complete or their High Mag Complete. Now, when we look at that, so I can take just one of those, and I'm going to take this All Season 7.5 Complete here, and depending on what additives, I can make it look like there's a whole lot of extra minerals out there, of extra formulations. But all we're doing is removing or adding additives. So look at that base product, and then we can look at those additives. And so when we talk about additives, I'm going to break them into two groups. Those that are well-researched and we know work and we get some benefit from, and then there's another group that don't have any research or very little research on them, and they may or may not be effective. So we're going to start with the ones absolutely work. So one of those is going to have IGR. IGR is an insect growth regulator. So if you say to me you're feeding a mineral with the fly control product in there, typically what you're feeding is IGR. The one most often you'll see the active ingredient is methoprene. Okay? Some of them, difluobenzuron is another active ingredient we see, but almost all of it that you're buying pre-mixed is going to be methoprene. CTC or chlorotetracycline, that's an antibiotic. Now, that's going to require a BFD to have in there. Some people, if they're having problems with anaplasmosis, we may have that CTC in there to help with that. Rumensin is an ionophore that we can put in mineral to help performance. All right. Now, big thing is if we put the rumensin in there, it really changes the intake of that mineral and really decreases it. So that's where we have to do some other things, and that's where that company research comes important to make sure we can still get that intake we're looking for when we put rumensin in there. Bovatec is another ionophore. Now, the big thing to remember with Bovatec is it's labeled for growing cattle. It is not labeled for our cow herd, all right? So just make sure if you have a mineral with Bovatec, we're not feeding it to those cows because that's off-label for that product. So I told you with our all-season 7.5, I have four minerals up here, but it's all the same base package. So I have it without any additives. The AU5600 has that CTC in it, that chlorotetracycline. I was talking about. The ALT stands for Altacid. Altacid is one of the brand names for the Methaprene, okay? So this is horn fly control. And then the All Season 7.5 Complete has right here with the AU5600 and ALT has both of them in there. So the antibiotic plus the fly control. So see, so just make sure when you look at that, sometimes when they show you that list or you're walking in the back of the feed dealer and looking at all those tags, it looks like there's a lot of different things. Well, they're all the same base. It's just what had happened from an additive standpoint.
The ALT is the...
Altacid, which is the brand name of Methaprene, which is a horn fly control IGR. All right? And then, like I said, there's a lot of additives that are not well-researched or have limited or no benefits, okay? And so they don't have to prove benefits to put it in the mineral. All right? There's a whole long list of these. If any claim sounds too good to be true, I'd be real cautious and make sure you check with somebody to make sure, yeah, this is really going to do what they're claiming it's going to do. Be aware of selectively reporting research. So I've seen some companies out there who they'll do some research projects, but the only ones they show you are the ones that worked really well. And all the ones they don't work, unless you know of the people who did that research, sometimes you never see those. And so that's why it's good to check as well. And then many of these just would not justify the added cost of including them in there. So when we talk about macro minerals, so remember that's our calcium, our phosphorus, our magnesium, we're going to talk about some geographic and some forage system considerations. So if we're on native range, what is native range? That's something that means a lot of different things to people. But here's what it really means, is forages that were always here. Now, a lot of us, especially in the eastern half of the state, have forages that we never planted, but somebody at some point in time planted or they got brought in somewhere. So when I'm talking about native range, I'm talking about things like little blue stem, big blue stem, Indian grass, witch grass, some of our grammas, all right, eastern gamma grass, those kind of things. When I talk about introduced forages, those are things like Bermuda grass, Bahia grass, Dallas grass, old world blue stem, okay? So little blue stem and big blue stem are totally different than old world blue stem. So old world blue stem would be things like King Ranch blue stem, K-Berg blue stem, WWB doll. So when we're talking about those true native range situations, when we talk about dormant forages, most mineral concentrations are going to decrease in that dormant forage, okay? The two big ones that really decrease are going to be phosphorus and potassium. Our protein and energy supplements, though, can greatly impact the calcium-phosphorus ratio of what we need in that mineral. And I'm going to show you that here in just a minute from a phosphorus standpoint, what we actually get out of some of those supplements. If you're having a custom cube or something made and you're on that dormant native range, if you can have them throw a little bit of potassium in there, that's not a bad idea because that dormant forage is going to lose that potassium. Now, if we're talking about a hay crop, we don't worry about it losing inside the hay bale. But that standing dormant forage out there, we will, a lot of that potassium is going to get sucked back down into the root of that plant. So we're going to work through a little example. This is ADM's line, and it's called AMPT, A-M-P-T. You're going to see here in a minute the naming's a little confusing. I was on a call on Wednesday, and we had to write everything out because there's so many letters, and those letters get repeated. But that's the line of the product is AMPT, but then they'll have an AMPT-A, and in that product, it's going to be 15% calcium, 4% phosphorus. So that's my high-cal, low-phosphorus type product. And then they have an AMPT-P, which is 12% calcium, 9% phosphorus. That's their similar calcium-phosphorus ratio, okay? Or that's what some people would call a higher phosphorus-type mineral, and that's what they would tell you you would need to feed on dormant range is what you hear a lot. And I'm going to show you that may not be the case, all right? So if we look, all these are going to be formulated for 4 ounces of intake. So if we look at their 15% calcium, 4% phosphorus, that A product, at 4 ounces, which is the same as a quarter pound of intake, 4% phosphorus, those cows are getting 4.5 grams of phosphorus a day. Okay? If we move them to the higher phosphorus mineral, 9% phosphorus, if they eat all of it, which is a big if, is 10.2 grams. And why I say that's a big if is phosphorus is generally pretty unpalatable. So the more phosphorus we put in that mineral, a lot of times we see intake go down on that mineral. So let's say that's what happened, which is what I would expect to happen, and we have that 12-9 mineral, that 9% phosphorus, but instead of eating a quarter pound a day, they only eat 2 ounces a day, or an eighth of a pound a day, versus the 4 ounces. At 9%, all I'm getting is 5.1 grams of phosphorus. That's really no difference than that high calcium, low phosphorus, just because of my intake there. All right? The bigger thing I want to show you, and this is a thing that doesn't get taken into account a lot of times, is let's say we're feeding some cottonseed meal. Or may not be feeding the meal form, but we're feeding a cottonseed cube, which is just cottonseed meal pressed. Sometimes they add a little bit of stuff to it. Sometimes they don't. It's going to have 1.1% phosphorus. If we're feeding 2 pounds a day of that, just in that protein supplement, we get 10 grams of phosphorus. So that's more than enough to make up for that difference there. So I could still, if I'm feeding this during the growing season, if I'm feeding this on dormant forages, there's absolutely no reason to change the mineral I'm feeding. You see what I'm saying as far as that phosphorus getting made up from that protein supplement? Another one we may use is distiller's grains. If we look at it, 0.7%, 6.4. Again, that's more than enough to make up for that difference in mineral. And I bring that up because it's easier for a lot of us if we're not constantly having to change that mineral. All right? And if we're feeding those protein or those energy supplements, a lot of times we're getting plenty of phosphorus in there. All right. How many of you heard phosphorus helps reproduction in beef cows? How many of you hesitate to say anything because you think you know where I'm going here? All right? I hear all the time about we need to feed more phosphorus because it helps reproduction. The only time it's going to help reproduction is if we're severely deficient in phosphorus on those animals. Once we meet those phosphorus requirements, feed more phosphorus is not going to help reproduction in those animals. Okay? So if somebody's been pushing that at you, realize once we meet those requirements, there's no advantage of that extra phosphorus. The other important thing to know is that research that showed an advantage in reproduction was done in South Texas before the 1950s. Do we manage cattle differently now than we did then? Absolutely. The other thing that doesn't often get talked about that study is so they talked about feeding them, or actually in some situations they actually caught them and drenched them with some phosphorus. They talked about it bumping reproduction. But in another treatment of that study, they just fertilized the pasture with phosphorus. They saw the exact same response, whether they fertilized the pasture or they actually fed them. We just don't ever hear that one part of it talked about. So if you are in an area where you're already fertilizing pastures in phosphorus, I'm never worried about you being phosphorus deficient. Okay? There's only a handful of times where we may have to worry about that a little bit. The other thing is I'll have some people who sell some products throw it back out at me because I'll tell a producer, go get this product, and they'll go to buy it, and their dealer will say, well, it doesn't have enough phosphorus in it. And they say, well, Dr. Banta told me this, and so then a little discussion starts. And what always gets thrown back at me is, you're telling them a lower level than what the beef cattle NRC says. And my response is, absolutely I am, because the beef cattle NRC phosphorus requirement is too high. There's been a ton of studies showing we don't need that much, all right? I actually expected them the previous one we had was published in 1996. The current one is published in 2016. I expected them to drop those requirements in 16 because all of us nutritionists had already been doing that for quite a while. They didn't drop it. So when we had the webinar on the topic, I asked the guy, I said, why didn't y'all drop it? He said, well, we know it's way lower than what we have in there. It's just hard in most situations to ever get lower than that number, so we just left it where it was. All right? So just because it's in that book doesn't mean maybe that totally fits what we know from a nutrition standpoint. The other thing on native range is just because the calcium content of the soil is really high doesn't mean those forages are pulling up a much higher amount of calcium than what we would see in some other environments. So when we look at Bermuda grass, which is typically grown in an area where we don't see a super high content of calcium in the soil, about 0.43% calcium in those plants on our native forage is about 0.48. So do we get a little bit more in there? Absolutely. Did we get a tremendous amount more in there? Absolutely not. Okay? If you're along the coast, a lot of times mineral intake can be challenging because of the salt. We actually use salt to encourage mineral intake initially. So if you're there, we may need to look at a low salt formulation. Some examples of that in the ADM line, it's their AMP-T, low salt version. And then Purina is a coastal cattle mineral. Sometimes some of the molasses tubs may be worth trying down there if we can find one that's formulated well. And then there's some work by Dr. John Arthington out of Florida where they looked at feeding those cows once a week and putting their weekly need of mineral, that or their projected need of mineral, in that feed and feeding them. And they got along pretty well with doing that. So in severe situations, that may be an option also. So I mentioned winter pasture, and the concern is grass tetany for those cows. The other thing I'll tell you is a lot of times the current belief in the nutrition community is when we're dealing with grass tetany problems, we may also be dealing with a low calcium problem. So it's important to have both of those in there. But the big thing on the magnesium is I need a consistent amount of intake, all right? It doesn't do me good when I'm dealing with magnesium to get a bunch in them right now and then not get any in them for several days or a week or 10 days. So I'd rather get a little bit of them in there every day rather than a big chunk at once, all right? The other thing is salt's important. So unfortunately what happens in some of these products that aren't put together in the best manner is that I actually pull salt out of the mineral to try to help with intake. Well, that's the worst thing we can do if we're dealing with grass tetany, because we need that salt to help get that magnesium absorbed in that animal. All right? So we never want to pull the salt out. And like I said, calcium's important, so we also want a higher calcium, lower phosphorus when we're dealing with those things. Or we believe calcium's important at this point in time. If you're in a situation where maybe you own some poultry houses and you're putting a lot of poultry litter out, you got to be careful because you can get too much litter out there and actually get an inverted calcium phosphorus ratio. And that is the last thing we want because it can cause some major problems. So if you're in that situation, we want to test that hay and just see how much phosphorus you're getting in that hay, because that can create some milk fever and some grass tetany and some other problems. And in that situation, we're probably actually going to feed a mineral that doesn't have any phosphorus at all in it. Okay? So if you've been putting a lot of poultry litter out there, and I'm talking a couple tons every year for 10 years or more, give me a call or give another nutritionist a call, and let's check some things and make sure we get that balanced out there. So when we talk about some trace mineral considerations, remember when we talk about trace minerals, I'm talking about that calcium, that zinc, that manganese, copper, that zinc, that manganese, that selenium, that iodine, and that cobalt. I really pay attention to ratios when it comes to trace minerals, because one of the things that gets us into problems sometimes is when we get those ratios out of balance. So if we look at the nutrient requirement of trace minerals based on our current level of knowledge, we'll typically want 10, 30, 40, which is 10 parts per million, 30 parts per million, 40 parts per million in the diet. I wouldn't worry about writing that down, okay? I have it memorized, but it's not going to apply directly because we're fixing to adjust it a little bit. That's the requirement of that animal. When we look at what's in the forage, what I generally want then is a ratio in my mineral supplement of 1 to 4 to 2. So If just to keep it simple, if that mineral has 1,000 parts per million copper, I want 4,000 parts per million zinc, and I want 2,000 parts per million manganese in most situations. I'm okay with the 1-3-2, but personally I prefer a 1-4-2 ratio in that. The other thing that's happened with copper is, I'm going to call it a copper race that started from a marketing standpoint. So because of some things that were happening back in the 70s and 80s and early part of the 90s, we started getting more copper in the mineral. And at that point in time, that was good because of some stuff that was happening. But we've gotten carried away with it because everybody's always wanting the highest. Well, having too much can cause us a problem. And in my mind, many of the products out there have way more copper than what we need. In some situations, they're actually at levels I would consider to be concerning. All right? And some people chase the copper because they've heard, well, if I have those cows with that red tinge coat, feeding them more copper will make them blacker. In some situations, yes. In other situations, that's a genetic issue. So just don't go overboard on that copper. High levels of copper have actually been reported to reduce average daily gain. So we may be thinking we're doing good, but in some situations, you're actually hurting yourself. When we talk about reproduction, there's a lot of misconceptions out there, and you'll see different things. When it comes to copper, and we look at all the research that's available out there in whole, I would say on the female side, we see no effect on reproduction, no direct effect. On bulls, I say probably no effect. In reality, there's no effect. There's just one paper I haven't translated, so until I do that, I'm going to leave it as probably, but really no effect there. Zinc we know is important from a reproduction standpoint. And on the cow side or the heifer side of things, there's not a lot of data in cattle, but we do know in mammalian species that zinc's important for ovarian function and specifically production of that CL, which is critical in maintaining pregnancies in the estrous cycle. So absolutely, I think zinc's going to be important from a reproduction standpoint. And then young growing bulls, we know zinc is important from testicular development standpoint. When we look at manganese, there may be some possible effects on the estrous cycle. Really need some more data in that area. And then as of right now, there's really no claims on the bull side. But the big one I want you to see is this one here. Always feel how important copper is for reproduction. Just hasn't ever shown to be that. Now, is copper important for some other things? Yes. But it's not going to be your magic bullet from a reproduction standpoint. Selenium, when we look at selenium requirement of the animal, oftentimes, especially in Texas, I'm worried about getting more selenium in there rather than not enough. So if we look at the selenium requirement for a 1,250-pound cow, it's about 1.3 milligrams per day, all right? Very small amount. The legal limit, so, you know, I told you you could kind of look at selenium and figure what intake probably is of that product. There's a legal limit on how much those feed companies can put of selenium in those products, and most of them tend to put the maximum limit in there. And that limit is 3 milligrams per day, which if we look at that, that's 2.3 times what her requirement is. So if we've maxed out the limit on that mineral, we're getting plenty of selenium in that animal. I actually worry about selenium becoming toxic if we're feeding multiple products or if we're giving injections that have selenium in there. So if we're feeding a loose mineral that's balanced and has max amount of selenium, and then we have a protein tub that has a mineral pack in it, and then we have a liquid feed that has a mineral pack in it, and then we're given an injection with some mineral in it, I start worrying about getting too much, and that causes problems. So do pay attention to that. If we have a good loose mineral out there, we really don't need that mineral packet in our protein, in our energy supplements. Iodine, there's some forms we need to pay attention to. There's some forms we don't want. Most of the companies handle that fine. My biggest concern with iodine is, how many of you heard you need a higher level of iodine to prevent foot rot? Okay, there is zero data to support that. All right, if I'm trying to work on foot rot, what I'm paying more attention to is actually zinc, because it's important for epithelial tissue, so that tissue between the toes and that hoof wall, It helps make those stronger, so I'm less likely to get foot rot. What I get real worried about is when you go buy iodine off the shelf and you try to mix more iodine in your mineral because you think it's going to help you with foot rot. The data is pretty darn clear. When we get too much iodine in there, we actually hurt weight gain on those animals. All right. So I would discourage you from going and buying extra iodine and mixing it in with your mineral. All right, sources of trace mineral. So this is a hot topic when it comes to mineral supplement. I'm going to break them into three major groups. So our inorganic sources, which would be things like copper sulfate, zinc oxide, and they're going to have an ionic bond. Our organic, and I really get where I hate ever using this word because it means so many different things to so many people now, but we still use it in the feeding world. Basically, we're going to have a covalent bond. Don't worry about the type of the bond. But basically, we have this bond between the mineral and either a protein or an amino acid molecule. All right? Sometimes we'll actually bind it to a carbohydrate molecule as well. But most of the time, it's going to be amino acid or protein. And so if you're looking at that list of ingredients on your mineral tag, you'll see things like zinc methionine, copper, amino acid complex. And then the newer group on the market is a group we call the hydroxy minerals. And again, we have a covalent bond, but instead of one of these organic compounds, and that's why we call these organic, because all these are carbon-containing compounds, they have a hydroxy group. All right? And so examples of that would be things like zinc, hydroxychloride, basic copper chloride. I always get the question, what's best? What do I need to feed? When we look at the research, it's going to vary a little bit. But before, the first thing I want you to realize is everybody in this room, whether you're feeding an organic mineral or not, your cows are getting organic trace minerals. Where are they getting them from? The feed and supplements you feed, that forage and those supplements, have organic trace minerals in there. That's just the way they work. They bind them in an organic complex. All right? When we look at the research between these groups, it is extremely inconsistent when it comes on animal growth, reproduction, and health. So some studies show a benefit. There's a lot of studies that show no benefit, and there's actually some studies that show negative. I've seen negative reproduction from putting organic trace minerals in a product. So what that tells me, when everything's that inconsistent, I'm not going to get real worried about one source over the other. Okay? I will change how much I put in my product depending on what sources, but I don't have to have this source versus this source. The other thing is, I already mentioned this a little bit with the copper, but I want to mention it with trace minerals in general, is too much can decrease average daily gain. Too much can decrease pregnancy rates. Okay? And that's not just where we're feeding it. That's however we're getting in that animal. Whether we're feeding it, whether you're drenching it, whether you're injectable, if you get too much, that can cause us some problems. And there's even been some situations that likely resulted in death of those animals for getting too much of certain trace minerals in those animals. So it's one of those things, there's a window. So if we don't have enough, that's negative. We're in the right window, that's good. We get too much, that's negative. So it's not the case if a little's good, a lot's better. If a little's good, too much may actually be bad for you. So be cautious of using multiple feedstuffs or products with added trace minerals. So like I said, if you already got that loose mineral out there, then you're feeding a tub and a block and a liquid feed, and you're giving injectables with minerals, we can definitely get too much in them. And I'll tell you, so a lot of people want to say, well, Jason, what level of copper, what level of zinc do you want in that mineral? I honestly cannot tell you unless I know what source they're using. Because some of these sources that have a higher bioavailability, I'm actually going to put them at a lower level in that mineral. So what I definitely don't want you doing is taking this mineral tag from this company and this mineral tag from this company and saying, well, this one has more zinc than this one. I want the one with higher zinc rather than the lower one. Well, the lower one may have a source that's more bioavailable. And so that's part of the reason when we're looking at those major products, I'll go ahead and give you the brand names because there's going to be some variation there. Just real quick on vitamins, we don't worry about B vitamins as long as that rumen's healthy because it's producing plenty of vitamins. On the fat soluble, vitamin A, D, E, and K. K is produced by the rumen microbes. E and A, as long as we have green growing forages, we're in good shape. It's when we don't, we're going to want some more of those. Where does vitamin D come from? There we go. Sunlight. All right. Vitamin A deficiency can cause us a problem. So if we're in a drought situation, we definitely want to make sure we're getting the right amount of vitamin A in there. And that may be where an injectable comes into place. And with that spike in vitamin A in the feed, that's actually the recommendation we ended up giving to a lot of operations, go ahead and give a vitamin A injection. Tubs, all right? When we talk about mineral tubs, and that's something that's come on really maybe the last 10 to 15 years, you got to be aware that most of those are going to need a separate salt source. They don't have any salt in there, and those cattle need access to salt. So if we look at that tub and it doesn't have any salt, I want to have the tub plus a salt block to go with it and a white salt block to go with it. All right? Most of them are going to have a similar calcium and phosphorus ratio, so if we're needing to balance some things, sometimes that becomes challenging. All right? So just to give you an example, and this happens to be Crystal Licks. They have what they call their Mineral Licks tub, all right, and then their IGR Max tub. Based on the ingredients in there, the one I really would prefer is the IGR Max from a mineral standpoint. It actually has a better mineral package in it than what the Mineral Licks is. They cut some things in there so they could sell a lower cost option for some folks. But neither one of these have any salt. So if you're going to look at a tub like that, that white salt, you need to get that block out there like we were talking about. Or if you don't want to use a block, you just get white loose salt, just mixing salt, and put out there as well. When we look at Purina, they have, and it's important that you get this one, AS4, CP stands for complete. The big deal here is the added zinc and copper, all right? It does have salt in it, has a low level of magnesium. So if I'm grazing winter pasture on their mag tub, they don't have any salt in there. So this one, I don't need a salt block. This one, I do need a salt block. So we got to look. And if you're unsure, just call and ask and double check that. Blocks, all right? Seen those? I've seen some people who have every color of block out there in that pasture, all right? All that's doing is hurting your pocketbook and not helping those cows in those situations. So this is all those minerals I'm talking about. And on those blocks, you can see we're missing a lot of things in those. I wouldn't consider those to be complete mineral supplements. The other thing is you have an arrow to copper oxide. Very, very, very low availability of that copper. That's not the source of copper I ever want to use in my mineral supplements. So we have to be careful of those kind of things as well. A lot of people like this one. I am not a fan of that one, all right? That excess sulfur can actually tie up some of my other trace minerals and reduce absorption of them. So I would stay away from this one right here, all right? The only one generally that ever we're really going to look at using is just that plain white one. Give me back. Did you get your picture? He's not listening to me anymore. Mineral feeders. There's a lot of different options. It's going to depend on what fits you and what fits your environment. Just an open top container like this, if I'm in a low rainfall environment, as long as the sides are high enough, I'm not getting too much wind in there, that'll work just fine. If I try to use that where my office is at in East Texas, that's not going to be a good situation. All right? These are really nice because they're easy to check. They're easy to refill. The downside is they can be a little pricey. Okay? This is what some people would call a bullproof mineral feeder is the name that gets used for it. It's just a plastic container with the rubber flap, and those cattle will learn how to flip that up. If you're using this, just make sure during the summer you put it in the shade because that rubber flap can get really, really hot, all right? One nice thing is they're hard to tear up. One disadvantage of these is they're hard to check, and a lot of people don't check them because they don't want to get out of the pickup or off the four-wheeler and lift that mat up. Okay? These wind vane ones, easy to check, work real good as long as you don't put them in with the bulls. And whether it's this one or any of the other mineral vein ones with the bulls, that becomes a play toy that doesn't last very long. Because it swings and hit him, or he hits it and it swings, and it turns into a game until you no longer have a mineral feeder. When we look at mineral intake, we don't want to try the cafeteria style approach, where we put all these individual minerals out there and think that cow's going to figure out what she needs. All right? She's going to eat what tastes good. So that's not the approach we want to go. We want to use a good, complete, mixed mineral supplement for those cows. The other thing is, if they don't eat it, it doesn't do them any good. This picture is of a block. So those square blocks I showed you earlier, there's over half of it left there. It was estimated by the guy who took that picture that that block was over 10 years old. Okay? So if they're not eating it, it's not doing you any good in those situations. Very good from a weather-resistant standpoint. All right? That intake's going to vary over time. Realize those lactating cows will often eat 2 to 2.5 times more mineral than what a dry cow is. So when we're looking at averages, I'm looking at long-term averages in those situations. This is over about an 18-month period on a 4-ounce mineral. You can see the variation in intake, but their long-term average was 3.6 ounces. Very comfortable with that in that situation. What are some things you can do if your intake is too high or too low? If it's too high, you can put some free choice salt out there. And by putting some more salt out there, you'll slow down mineral intake. Move the location of the mineral feeder. Move it further away from the water. Move it away from your other feeding sources, and a lot of times that'll slow intake down a little bit. Or just reduce how much you're putting out there. Figure out what they need in a week, and you only put that amount out in a week. And if they eat it in 4 days, they eat it in 4 days. Okay? If your intake is too low, and this is often a problem, see if those cows are getting salt from somewhere else. So one of the biggest problems we see is people want to use what they call a range meal. Okay, which is often a mix of salt and cottonseed meal, or salt, cottonseed meal, and salt. If you feed something like that, they are not going to eat your mineral. So if you're going to feed something like that, you have to mix the mineral back in. Now I'm going to tell you there's some much easier ways to supplement than using that salt, cottonseed meal mix, because salt or cottonseed meal has some very easy ways we can supplement it. All right, so salt, like I mentioned earlier, it does two things. Initially, it encourages those animals to eat, but then at a point, it starts discouraging them to eat. So that's why we got to get the salt in the right balance with our other minerals in there. Phosphorus generally decreases intake. Magnesium generally decreases intake. So that's why I said I'm not always a fan of that high mag mineral, because the cows just won't eat it as well. Or if we try to go to that high phosphorus mineral, on some of that native range country, we just don't get as much intake out of it. Some additives that are used to stimulate intake, molasses, yeast, there's some other flavoring agents. Sometimes they'll put some mineral oil in there, and that can have an impact on palatability as well. It's not real hard to calculate that mineral intake. Wait till the mineral feeder's empty or empty it. Put 50 pounds out there of that 50-pound sack. Record how many days it takes them to eat it. Divide the 50 pounds by the number of days. So you got pounds per day. Divide the pounds per day by the number of cows, and we got your intake. So you don't have to have a scale. You don't have to have anything else. You just got to write down when you put it out, when they emptied it. Yes, sir. So when it comes to any kind of an injectable mineral, whether it's the multi-menu name or some of the other ones that have been on the market currently or various times, if I'm feeding a good, loose, free-choice mineral, I just can't see a reason to add an injectable product in there. Now, there's times if I'm trying to look at from a diagnostic standpoint, I may use one there. But as far as a general practice, I wouldn't. If you want to use an injectable product, whether it's Multamine or anything else, just make sure you don't overuse it. There's actually one of the biggest studies that's ever been done with an injectable mineral product. They reduced reproduction rates in those cows by giving two injections of that product versus one injection of that product. So if we're balanced, I just don't see a need, because the other thing with those injectable minerals is it's only going to get you a handful of your trace minerals. It's not going to get you all those other things we talked about. So I'd just rather have a complete loose source typically, or a complete tub formulation or something like that. That answer your question? Right, so in some of those situations, and I told you there's various situations, he said he wants to use it on cattle coming in. I don't have any objections to doing that. The data is unclear on how beneficial that is. Just, I wouldn't do it more than once on those cattle, all right? But I would darn sure make sure in a loose mineral, or if you're feeding those cattle a little bit, make sure you have a good mineral packet in there. The other challenge with some of those injectable products is maybe those trace minerals aren't in the formulation we want. The other thing is some trace minerals store in the body very well, others don't. So some of them we give it to them, whether it's orally or whether it's an injection, and orally I mean they're eating it or maybe we've drenched it in them, they're going to take a couple days worth and the rest of it they're going to excrete. Whereas some of those other trace minerals, they're going to store it in the liver for a long period of time. So that's the other thing challenging about oral products or injectable products, is those ones that they excrete, then you're not getting them in there as at a frequent rate as what we would like to. That answer? Yes, sir. So iodine and lumpy jaw, I'm not aware of any research that would show a relationship there at the levels we're feeding. Now, obviously, if you take that animal into the vet and you're treating for lumpy jaw, they're going to give an IV of an iodine solution. But that rate is exponentially higher than what we feed. So from a feed standpoint, where I would generally want to see that iodine is somewhere between about 70 and 150 parts per million in the mineral. Getting any higher than that, just never seen any advantages, whether it's lumpy jaw or foot rot or those kind of things. Okay. So our question was, what about loose mineral versus tubs, both out or switch between them? That's a question I can't fully answer without knowing the tag off your tub to know, does it have a complete mineral package in it, or is it just more of a protein supplement type tub? It's the Purina. Well, if you're using the Purina, and so Purina makes a loose tub and a loose mineral, I'm not going to put both of them out and I'm not going to switch. I'm going to pick the one that fits you best for your operation and just either use a loose product or use a tub product.
So the mix don't really help you to assimilate the hay.
Okay. So her question was, the licks don't really, and she asked us a question, don't really help them assimilate the hay. So there's a big difference between when we're talking a mineral supplement versus are we talking a protein supplement, an energy supplement, or maybe both a protein and a mineral supplement together. So the simple answer to that question is, if we're protein deficient in those animals and we feed a tub or any other source of protein that that animal can use, it will actually help them digest that hay better. Okay? But don't make your mineral decision off of that. So the simple answer I would give you right now is just get your loose mineral and use that, all right? And when we need to supplement the hay, we'll supplement the hay, but we're going to change the mineral program there. Does that answer your question? So his question was fetal imprinting or fetal programming. What about those things? I'm going to tell you that data is still very, very limited, and a lot of their extrapolating from other species. Based on all the data I've seen, as long as we're meeting nutrient requirements of those animals, I don't see any benefits or any negatives beyond that point. So I'm going to focus on meeting the requirement and not anything beyond that point. Does that answer your question?
Well, we've been having what we consider a decent mineral supplement for many years on dry land, native pasture type situation. Is there any pass through of vitamins and minerals through the urine and our feces?
Absolutely. You're actually fertilizing that pasture to some extent through that mineral supplement. Not much, but yeah, there's definitely some pass through.
I kind of thought that, but
yeah.
I didn't know.
Let me get you to hold that question for a minute. Let me hit a couple slides and then we'll take some in between if that's all right. When do you need to feed a mineral? All right. Year round is generally going to be best. If you say, I'm not going to do that from a budgetary standpoint, last three of gestation, kind of back to your question there, first three of pregnancy, and then the other time, make sure you put salt out, free choice all the time if you don't have a mineral out there. If you're on introduced pasture and you're feeding hay, I want a higher calcium, lower phosphorus mineral. Cargill, that would be Emerald. Purina, that would be their AS5 complete or the AS7.5 complete. ADM, that's going to be the AMP-A. If I'm on growing native range or I'm on dormant native range, but I'm feeding a protein and an energy supplement that has a decent level of phosphorus in it, which most of them will, all right, then I'm still going to be at the Emerald, the AS5, the AS7.5, or the AMP-A. So as long as I'm feeding a protein or energy supplement on native range, I'm not going to change when that forage turns color, regardless of what the marketing departments of some of the companies tell you. All right? If I'm on dormant native range and I'm not feeding any protein or energy supplement, then I may make a change as long as I can still get some good intake out of that product. All right? And the adequate intake is important. So on the Cargill, that would be Bronze. The Purina, that would be the AS12 complete. And the AMP, that would be their AMP-P. By no means are these all the options out there. I just use these to give you some options that are widely available that you can kind of look at and know what we're talking about. Winter pasture, all right? I'm not on the Emerald. I'm not going to move to their high max. I'm going to stay at the 5, okay? On Purina, if I use the AS5 complete, I'm fine. If I'm using the AS7.5 complete, what I actually need to do is use the 7.5 complete most of the year, but when I'm on that winter pasture with those lactating cows, the high mag. This is going to be a higher level, but intake is good on that product from my experience. And then the ADM line, you're going to move to their M product, AMPT-M. All right? Stocker cattle, just real quickly, make sure you get a high calcium mineral out on those stocker cattle. It can be worth an extra quarter pound of weight gain a day or more. All right? And with that, I'll be happy to take a couple quick questions. Yes, sir.
Go back to multiple products a while ago. There's a lot of confusion. It's intent is not intended to substitute for a good, like you said, balanced mineral. What it is intended to do is to ensure risk management.
Right, so is there a question in there?
Yeah. So the question is, where would you use Multimin in those productions?
I'm going to answer this not as an A&M employer or anybody else. I'm just going to tell you what I do in my personal cow herd. In my personal cow herd, we don't use any kind of injectable mineral products ever. Yes, ma'am.
You said that the
Right. So on your mental tag, if it's, well, they're all going to be more than that requirement I showed you. On your mineral tag, it's going to be 25 to 27 parts per million on a 4-ounce mineral. On a 2-ounce mineral, it's going to be 50 to 54. Right? I think we're out of time, so I'm going to turn it back over to our moderator. I will tell you, if you have some questions, I'll be around and happy to answer those during break.